So the X-ray transform is an operator which maps functions on RD to functions defined on the set of lines in RD. And it does this in just the most obvious way. You integrate the function over the line. So given a function f on RD and a line L in RD, we write the X-ray transform of f at L. It's just the integral of f over L. And here, through this whole talk, we're always going to assume the local problem where f is supported on some fixed ball. And so here, we're only integrating over things with some finite measure. Okay, and so the first part of the talk, I want to consider estimates for the X-ray transform, where we allow the X-ray transform to vary over all possible directions. Okay, so so we want some mixed norm estimates. We need to put mixed norms on the X-ray transform. And so to do that, we need to parameterize the set of lines in RD. So we have SD minus 1 is the unit sphere in RD, and this is going to represent the set of all possible directions for our lines. And then for each direction C in SD minus 1, C perp is going to be the set of all possible translations for the lines in that given direction. Okay, so then if C is in SD minus 1 and X is in C perp, L of C and X is just going to denote the line parallel to the direction C, which passes through the point X. Okay, and then we put the LQ of LR mixed norms on the X-ray transform. And so basically we just take the LQ norm on the outside over the set of directions. And then for each direction C, we take the LR norm on the inside over the set of all possible translations. Okay, and then the orthogonal complement of C. So it's just a hyperplane. And then what we're looking for are LP to LQ of LR mixed norm estimates. So we want the LQ of LR mixed norm of the X-ray transform bounded by a constant times the LP norm of F. Okay, and then there's this sort of standard conjecture on when you expect this might be true. And so basically, we're looking for bounds with P between 1 and D. And then R is going to be equal to D minus 1 times P over D minus P. So we start off at P equal to 1. And here, this gives us R equal to 1. And then as P goes up towards D, R gets bigger and bigger and shoots off to infinity. Okay, and then there's this value of Q. And then we expect that for this range of P, Q, and R, X-ray transform should be bounded from LP to LQ of LR. And then since we're considering the local problem, there's also this trivial L infinity to L infinity of L infinity estimate sitting around. And so you can kind of interpolate any of these sort of sharp estimates with this L infinity estimate, and you get estimates where R is less than the optimal value here and P is possibly a lot bigger than D. And in some cases, these non-sharp PR type estimates are going to be the sort of estimates that we're able to prove rather than the sharp type estimates that we'd really like. Okay. So here, so P is strictly less than D, so R never actually gets to infinity here. Okay, and these LP to LQ of LR mixed norm estimates are related to this problem in geometric measure theory called the DK-Kakeya problem. And so this is a problem about DK sets. And a subset E of RD is said to be a DK set if E contains a translate of every k-dimensional disk of diameter 1. So it contains a k-dimensional disk pointing in every possible direction. Okay. And so the version of this problem that you're most likely to have seen is when k is equal to 1, and it's just called the Kakeya problem. So a D1 set is just a set which contains a line segment of length 1 pointing in every possible direction. These are usually called Kakeya sets. And so the DK Kakeya problem is then to answer the question of how small can DK sets be. And by small, I mean maybe in terms of Hausdorff dimension or Minkowski dimension or Lebesgue measure. Okay. And then once you have this question in mind, you might try to cook up a small example of a DK set. And probably the first thing you'd think of is just any ball of diameter 1. Okay, so a ball of diameter 1 clearly contains a k-dimensional disk pointing in every possible direction, so it's a DK set for every D in K. Okay, and seems to be a fairly small example. Okay, but when K is equal to 1, Bezukhovich, maybe back around 1920, showed that there are actually Kakeya sets, so they're actually D1 sets of Lebesgue measure 0. So in other words, they're D1 sets that are much smaller than the unit ball, which is kind of a surprising fact. Okay. However, it's conjectured that they can't be too much smaller than having measure 0, so it's conjectured that they still have to have the maximum possible Hausdorff dimension, which is, of course, D. And this was shown to be true when D is equal to 2 by Davies, but this is still open for D greater than 2, although there's been a lot of partial progress, and I guess the world records are held by Katz, Laba, and Tau. Okay, so what I'm going to be focusing more on here is the case where K is greater than 1. And here, in contrast to when K is equal to 1, where D1 sets can have measure 0, when K is greater than 1, we actually expect that DK sets have to have positive Lebesgue measure. Okay. And this was originally shown to be true when DK is equal to 3, 2 by Marstrand. And then this was improved to whenever D minus K is less than K by Falconer. And finally, to whenever D minus K is less than or equal to 2 to the K minus 1, and K is greater than or equal to 2 by Borgan. So this is a fairly big jump going from K to 2 to the K. And so it's kind of interesting. And this is actually going to motivate some of the estimates for the X-ray transform that we're going to talk about in a second. Okay, so I said these LP to LQ of LR estimates are related to the Kakeya problem, so how are they related? Well, the most obvious way is the following. If we had an LP to LQ of L infinity estimate for the X-ray transform, then this would imply that D1 sets have positive Lebesgue measure. Okay, and morally, the way you see this is you take F to be the characteristic function of your D1 set, and then since it's a D1 set, for every direction C, it contains a line segment of length 1 parallel to C, so there's an X, so that it contains a line segment of the line LCX. So this L infinity norm has to be large for every C, so the LQ of L infinity norm is large, so your set would have to have positive measure. But of course, the only use this is that, so we know that D1 sets can't have positive Lebesgue measure, so this just shows that this can't be bounded. Okay, but what you can do is use something similar to get Hausdorff dimension estimates. Okay, so delta is some very small number greater than 0, and we set X delta of F at L. So instead of being the average of F over the line L, we want it to be the average of F over the delta neighborhood of the line L. And then it turns out, so this is an observation of Borgan, that If you have an LP to LQ of L infinity estimate for x delta, and now we allow these estimates, we allow the norm of these estimates to blow up like a power of delta as delta goes to zero. So if you have an estimate like this that blows up no worse than delta than minus alpha over p, then this implies that D1 sets have to have Hausdorff dimension at least D minus alpha. Okay. So you can't have LP to LQ of L infinity estimates for x, but you can have LP to LQ of L infinity estimates for x delta if you allow the norm to blow up when delta goes to zero. And these sorts of estimates give you information about the Hausdorff dimension of Kakeya sets. And these, I'm going to call these Kakeya maximal operator estimates. So this is an LP to LQ estimate for the Kakeya maximal operator. Okay, so what does this have to do with the LP to LQ of LR estimates for the X-ray transform? Well, turns out that if you have an LP to LQ of LR estimate for the X-ray transform, then just using Holder's inequality, you can get an LP to LQ estimate for the maximal operator. And so turns out the kind of estimate you're going to get, the LP to LQ estimate, which blows up no worse than delta to the minus alpha over p, now where alpha is this number, d minus 1 times p over r. And then this is just using Holder's inequality. And then from before, we know that this sort of estimate implies that D1 sets have Hausdorff dimension at least d minus 1 times p over r. So here, the strength of our Hausdorff dimension estimate depends on the ratio r divided by p and our mixed norm estimate. So these mixed norm estimates are related to the Kakeya problem, but just from here, we don't have much of a motive to actually study the mixed norm estimates. We could just study the maximal operator bounds instead. But you can look at these sort of mixed norm versions of Kakeya sets, where you're going to get better estimates from the LP to LQ of LR estimates. So gamma is just some number between 0 and d minus 1. And now we say that a subset E of RD is a gamma Kakeya set if for each direction C, there's a non-empty set HC contained in C perp, so that the Hausdorff dimension of HC is at least gamma, and so that for every X in HC, E contains a segment from the line L of CX. Okay, so when gamma is equal to 0, all we're saying is that this thing contains a segment from a line in each direction. So all we're saying is that this is a regular Kakeya set. But when gamma is greater than 0, these actually have to contain a lot of lines in each direction, a whole gamma dimensional collection of these lines. Okay. And so now, this is an observation of Wolf that you can use mixed norm estimates for the X-ray transform to estimate the Hausdorff dimension of these mixed norm Kakeya sets. Okay, so this is not like any kind of standard terminology, by the way. But the kind of estimate you get is that if you have an LP to LQ of LR estimate for X delta, which blows up no worse than delta to the minus alpha over P, then it turns out that gamma Kakeya sets have to have Hausdorff dimension at least d minus 1 minus gamma times p over r minus alpha. Okay, so gamma is equal to 0 here. Then you're just talking about Kakeya sets, and the kind of estimate you get out of an LP to LQ of LR estimate is just the same estimate you would get for the maximal operator, from the maximal operator bound implied by that LP to LQ of LR estimate. But now, when gamma is greater than 0, you get increasing returns from your mixed norm estimates, but you don't get increasing returns from your maximal operator estimates because their p over r is 0. And so Okay, so another reason we're interested in the mixed norm estimates here is that you can get some Hausdorff dimension estimates for DK sets from these mixed norm estimates. So it turns out that if you have LP to L cube LR estimates for the X-ray transform in every dimension where the ratio R over P is independent of the dimension, it turns out that this implies that DK sets do have positive measure now when D minus K is less than R over P to the K minus 1. Now this is something I noticed when I was studying Borghan's result, that DK sets have positive measure when D minus K is less than 2 to the K minus 1. And so, morally, is basically for similar reasons, but this is not really explicit before. Okay, and the proof of this is pretty easy. It's by induction. And we start off by looking at the Hausdorff dimension of Kakeya sets in R D minus K minus 1. Okay, and so we just take our mixed norm estimate, get the maximal operator bound, and see that the Hausdorff dimension of these Kakeya sets is at least D minus K minus 1 minus D minus K times P over R. So in other words, the co-Hausdorff dimension is less than or equal to D minus K times P over R. Okay, so then the main step is the inductive step, and we want to suppose that we know that tilde D minus 1, tilde K minus 1 sets have Hausdorff dimension at least tilde D minus 1 minus beta. So in other words, they have co-Hausdorff dimension less than beta. And then we want to see that this implies that DK sets are gamma Kakeya sets with gamma equal to this number D minus 1 minus beta. Okay. And so why is this? Well, a DK set definitely contains a line pointing in every direction. So it's definitely a D1 set, but it's really bigger than that. It contains a lot of lines in each direction. So for each direction C, it contains a line segment from the lines L of C and X for X in a D minus 1, K minus 1 set sitting in C perp. And so then since D minus 1, K minus 1 sets have Hausdorff dimension at least tilde D minus 1 minus beta, then this means that DK sets are gamma Kakeya sets with gamma equal to tilde D minus 1 minus beta. Okay, and then we just use the mixed norm estimate to estimate the Hausdorff dimension of our gamma Kakeya set, and we see that it's at least tilde D minus beta times P over R. So what we're doing here is we're improving our co-Hausdorff dimension beta by a factor of P over R. Okay, and then we just iterate this, and each time we use up a K, and if D minus K is less than R over P to the K minus 1, then by the time we get to D minus 1, K minus 1 sets, our co-Hausdorff dimension is less than 1, which it turns out is enough to get us a positive measure using certain L2 methods. Okay, and really, I can point out that L2 methods, this thing's going in the wrong direction. Okay. Okay, so the X-ray transform really also maps L2 to L2, gaining 1/2 derivative. So there you can take P over R equal to 1, and basically gamma equal to negative 1. And so morally, if you have a gamma Kakeya set for gamma greater than D minus 2, then it should have positive measure. Okay, so then, so you want to see what happens when you apply this with known estimates for the X-ray transform. So the X-ray transform is known to be bounded from LD plus 1 over 2 to LD plus 1 of LD plus 1. So this is proved by Drury for P less than D plus 1 over 2, and Chris got the endpoint. And here, R over P is equal to 2. And so if you plug this into the iterative method, you get the DK sets have positive measure when 2 to the K minus 1 plus K, or when D minus K is less than 2 to the K minus 1, which is basically what Borgann proved. So you can recover Borgann's result from Drury and Chris' estimate for the X-ray transform. Okay, and then since the work of Drury and Chris, there have been more estimates for the X-ray transform. So Wolf gave certain LD plus 2 over 2 estimates for the maximal operator, and then later he improved this to LP to LQ of LR estimate for the X-ray transform when D is equal to 3, and then this is extended to D greater than 3 by Laba and Tau. And so then you can try to plug this into the iterative method, and what happens is when D is equal to 3, we already know everything about DK sets, so this doesn't really give us new information. And then when D is greater than 3, you end up losing a power of delta here, which makes it not work very well for the iterative method. So we don't get anything new from this. And then since this, Katz and Tau have given certain L4D plus 3 over 7 estimates for the maximal operator. And so I was interested to see whether their method could be extended to give mixed norm estimates. Okay, and so it turns out that it can be, and you can get the almost sharp L4D plus 3 over 7 mixed norm estimates for the X-ray transform using basically the same method. And so here we go from R over P equal to 2 in the Drury and Crist result to R over P equal to 7 thirds, which is a little bit bigger. And then in the same paper, Katz and Tau gave certain Hausdorff dimension estimates for D1 sets that are better than the Hausdorff dimension estimate implied by their maximal operator bound. And so using part of the method from that, it turns out that you can give mixed norm estimates for the X-ray transform now where R over P is arbitrarily close to 1 plus the square root of 2. And 1 plus the square root of 2 then is bigger than 7 thirds. Okay, so but what happens here is that if you take R over P closer and closer to 1 plus the square root of 2, the values of P, R, and Q explode here. So these are not sharp type estimates, which is why this is still interesting. So then, as a corollary, you see now that DK sets have positive measure when D minus K is less than 1 plus the square root of 2 to the K minus 1, where before we only knew it when D minus K was less than 2 to the K minus 1. Okay. Okay, so that finishes the first part of the talk. And now the second part of the talk, I'm going to talk about estimates for the X-ray transform now where we restrict the set of directions to lie on some submanifold of the sphere instead of being the whole sphere. And so this is joint work with Barak Erdogan. Okay, so we need to set up our mixed norms and we need to parameterize the set of lines. So we let H be some hyperplane in RD, and we let ED be the vector orthogonal to H. And then K is going to be the dimension of our set of directions, so it's going to be at least 1 and less than the largest possible dimension, which is D minus 1. And then theta is going to be our set of directions, which is parameterized by the map theta of z. And so this is going to map, say, the unit ball in RK into the hyperplane H, and it's going to parameterize the submanifold of H. And then for X in H and Z in the unit ball in RK, we set L of Z in X now to be the line in the direction theta Z plus ED. So ED was a vector orthogonal to H and passing through the point X. Okay, so this is just a convenient parameterization to use. And then we have the L cube LR restricted mixed norms, restricted to the manifold theta. And we just take the LQ norm on the outside again, over the directions theta z, theta of z plus ED. And for each direction, we take the LR norm over the lines parallel to that direction. And then again, the question is, for which P, Q, and R is the X-ray transform bounded from LP to L cube LR now restricted to the directions theta? And so, in a lot of cases, this has a pretty simple answer. If theta is flat, then you just get completely trivial estimates. So to get non-trivial estimates, theta should not be flat. And so what I mean here is it should have d minus 1 linearly independent derivatives at each point. And then we expect that we should get the best possible estimates when theta is a well-curved surface. Okay, and so when k is equal to d minus 2, so when we have a d minus 2 surface, this is codimension 1 in H. And so well-curved here means that it has non-vanishing Gaussian curvature. And so codimension 1, we know what well-curved means. And then dimension 1, when you have a 1 surface, we also know what well-curved means. It just means that not only do we have d minus 1 linearly independent derivatives, but they're the first d minus 1 derivatives are linearly independent everywhere. But then when the codimension is between 1 and the maximum possible codimension, it's not quite as clear what it means for a surface to be well curved. So I think there are at least some ideas about this. When the codimension is less than half the ambient dimension, but when you go below that, I'm not so sure. Okay, so I'm not going to say a whole lot about what's known for these mixed norm estimates for the restricted X-ray transform. There's been a lot of work done. I couldn't list everything, so I'm just going to list three results which are most directly related to the work I'm going to talk about. So first one is this result of Wolf's, and so he took theta to be the unit sphere in H, so SD minus 2. So it has codimension 1, and this is a well-curved surface. And so he was able to get, when d was equal to 3 or 4, he proved, except for endpoints, the best possible mixed norm estimates for this operator. And then when d was greater than or equal to 5, he no longer got the full expected range of exponents, but he got the sharp ones for p up to d plus 1 over 2. This is almost sharp when d is equal to 3 or 4. And then to get this in all dimensions would definitely be a hard problem. So it's not surprising here that he wasn't able to do it, because it turns out, as he pointed out, if you got the almost sharp estimates in all dimensions, this would answer the Kakeya problem, basically because you're only restricting your set of directions a little bit. It only has codimension 1, so as your dimension blows up, this approximates the unrestricted problem pretty well. Okay, so in particular, when d is equal to 3 here, he gets almost sharp estimates for a one surface for a curve. And then Erdogan looked into whether this could be extended to get almost sharp estimates for well-curved curves in higher dimensions. Okay, so the typical example of a well-curved curve is the moment curve t, t squared through t to the d minus 1. And then Erdogan was able to extend Wolf's method to get the almost sharp estimates for the x-ray transform restricted to this curve when d was equal to 4 and 5. And then later, Crist and Erdogan went further, and they were able to get the almost sharp range of P, Q, and R in all dimensions. And then the way these arguments worked is morally, these are all sort of geometric combinatorial Bush and hairbrush arguments. And so the difference is that in Wolf's result and Erdogan's result, they used discrete counting arguments. So they discretized the problem and counted incidences between delta tubes. But in the Crist-Erdogan result, they used the iterated T star T method, which can be considered to be a continuous counting argument. And so with the iterated T star T method, the intersections of lines are controlled sort of by analyzing sublevel sets of a certain Jacobian, versus with these discrete counting arguments, you kind of use just brute force geometric reasoning. And so this maybe allows you to be a little more systematic. And so this iterated T star T method is what Crist had previously used to give almost sharp convolution estimates for the moment curve, and so they went ahead and gave almost sharp x-ray transform estimates also. Okay, so Wolf got the almost sharp result when d was equal to 3 or 4, and so that was when SD minus 2 was a 1 or 2 surface, and then Erdogan and Crist extended this to get almost sharp results whenever you have a well-curved one surface. And so then a natural question to ask is, can these methods be used to give almost sharp results now for two surfaces in higher dimensions? And it turns out that the answer is at least sometimes. Okay, so the first open case here was d equal to 5. And here, our set of directions is a 2 surface in R4. And so we want to write theta of UV as UV theta bar of UV, where theta bar maps R2 and R2. And now we set A to be the determinant of theta bar, so the second derivative of theta bar with respect to U, and the mixed derivative with respect to U and V. And then B is the determinant of the second derivative with respect to U and the second derivative with respect to V. And C is the determinant of the mixed derivative with respect to U and V and the second derivative with respect to V. And then we say that theta is non-degenerate if B squared minus 4AC is not equal to 0 everywhere. So everywhere it's not, nowhere 0. And this, it turns out, is equivalent to this curvature condition that Crist has for surfaces which have codimension 2. And then an example here of a non-degenerate 2 surface in R4 is just theta of UV is UV, U squared minus V, 2 UV. And so this is the complex parabola. So V is U plus IV. And so we have z, z squared. And so we were able to prove that if the entries of theta bar are quadratic polynomials and theta is non-degenerate, then you get these LP to L cube LR estimates, which are almost sharp, and they sense that no better LP to L cube LR estimates, except for endpoints, are satisfied for any two surface in R4. And then in higher dimensions, our results are a little bit less satisfying. So previously we had D is equal to 5, and for a second I'm going to skip D is equal to 6 and move on to D is equal to 7, 8, and 9. And here we obtain similarly optimal estimates. So we obtain estimates so that no better estimates are satisfied except for endpoints for any surfaces in these dimensions. But now we only get them for like one surface in each dimension, instead of having it for every surface satisfying this curvature condition. And so, let's see, when D is equal to 7, surface is U, V, and then now we use up the quadratic monomials, U squared, U, V, and V squared, and then we have to move on to cubic terms, and we take U cubed plus V cubed. And then D is equal to 8, we do the same thing, we use up the quadratic monomials, and now we need two cubic terms, so we take U squared V and UV squared. And then when D is equal to 9, we use up the quadratic monomials, and we need three cubic terms, so we just combine these, get U cubed plus V cubed, U squared V, and UV squared. And then when D is equal to 6, the obvious choice for the surface is UV, U squared, UV, V squared. And here we're not able to get the almost sharp mixed norm estimates. We're only able to get the almost sharp LP to L cube LQ estimates. And this is a little bit disappointing because this is really, out of these four, this is the only one where we really knew how to choose the surface. I mean, it has to be, pretty much has to be this surface. And so in a second I'm going to discuss kind of sort of the technical issue we run into here. And as far as going beyond D is equal to 9, so I mentioned this method, you have to analyze sublevel sets of a certain Jacobian, and up to 6 we were able to calculate the Jacobian by hand, but once we got to D is equal to 7, we had to get Maple to simplify this thing for us. And then once we got up to D is equal to 10 or so, we couldn't even get Maple to do it. The determinant was just too big. So to describe the sort of problem we run into with D is equal to 6, I need to talk a little bit about how the iterated T-star T method works. And so we have a set of points E and RD, and a set of lines F sitting in RK times RD minus 1. And then we're looking for a restricted weak type estimate that's the pairing of the X-ray transform of the characteristic function of E with the characteristic function of F is bounded by the measure V is 1 over P times the LQ prime of LR prime norm of the characteristic function of F. And now, two important quantities that we want to keep in mind for the iterated T star T method are alpha and beta here. And alpha, this is just the average value of the X-ray transform of the characteristic function of E on the set F. And then we let X star be the adjoint of the X-ray transform. And now beta is just the average value of X star of the characteristic function of F on E. And then we have sort of two important maps here, gamma and gamma star. And so given a line ZX, the X-ray transform of the characteristic function of E is given by integrating characteristic function of E over that line. And so gamma just parameterizes the line that we integrate over as we vary T. And then the adjoint of the X-ray transform, X star, given a point Y in RD, X star of the characteristic function of F at Y, we're just integrating the characteristic function F over this two-manifold and the set of lines. And then gamma star here parameterizes that two-manifold. I haven't specialized the two here. I've got K. So it parameterizes a K-manifold as you vary Z. K-manifold in the set of lines. And that's what we integrate over to get X star. So now we choose just some typical point Y naught in E, and the average value of X star on E is beta, so we expect that X star, the characteristic function of F, should be more or less beta at Y naught. And then that's just saying exactly the same thing, is that there exists a measure beta set of Z's so that gamma star of Y naught Z is in F. Okay. Now each of these points is sitting in F, and we know that the average value of the X-ray transform of E on F is alpha, so we expect that for more or less, you know, most of these points, we should have the X-ray transform at this point being approximately alpha, which is the same thing as saying that there's a measure alpha set of T's, so that gamma of gamma star of Y naught Z T is in E. Okay, but now this guy's sitting in E, which is right where we started. So we assume that this guy is a typical point, and we just iterate this process N times. And what we end up with is this set omega and set of z1s, t1s, through zn's, tn's. So omega is our parameter space tower, and it has this tower structure here, so that for each z1, t1 through zi, the set of ti's, so that z1, t1 through zi, ti is in omega, it has measure alpha. And then for each z1, t1 through zi, ti, the set of zi plus 1, so that z1, t1 through zi, ti, zi plus 1, has measure approximately beta. And then this set also has the property that this iterated map gamma maps omega into E. Okay, so this is just given by composing gamma of gamma star over and over again. Okay. And so now we'd like to choose N so that the dimension of this thing is the same as the dimension of E. So we want N times K plus 1 equal to D. And when k is equal to 2, it turns out we can always do this by chopping off one end or the other and possibly estimating F instead of E. And so now if you do this, then you just change variables here to get a lower bound for the measure of E. And then what you end up with is the following. We have the measure of E is greater than or equal to this number J times the measure of omega. And measure of omega is just alpha to the n times beta to the n. And here J is a lower bound for this Jacobian, which we can get to hold on a refinement of omega. Okay. And then depending on J, you end up with some sort of restricted weak type estimate when you unravel all of the definitions. Okay, and then how good this estimate is just depends on how good your lower bound for J is. And so, sort of if each set of the TIs is really evenly distributed over the interval 0, 1, and each set of the ZIs was really evenly distributed over the unit ball in RK, then we would expect to be able to get good estimates for J. This is, at least if j doesn't like vanish to infinite order at 0, then we can just throw out our set of points near the 0 set, and then since it's evenly distributed, we're not throwing out too much, and so we get a good estimate for j. And when k is equal to 1, Tao and Wright were basically able to get this to happen. So Tao and Wright, so they used an argument kind of based on the iterated T star T method to get almost sharp LP to LQ estimates for a very large class of operators which average over curves. And a key part of the argument was the use of this lemma, which says that if you have a set of points sitting in interval 0, 1, and you have some small number epsilon, then you can find this interval I so that your set is mostly contained in I and well distributed within I. Okay, so what I mean by mostly contained in I, so it's a measure of S intersected with I, is at least the measure of S to the 1 plus epsilon. And what I mean by well distributed within I is that for any interval j that's much smaller than I, the measure of S intersected with j is bounded by the measure of j over the measure of I to the epsilon times measure of S intersected with I. So this is negligible if the measure of j is small. Okay, so they used this to get the TIs and the ZIs well distributed within certain intervals, and then they rescaled it using this Nagelstein and Wanger Carnot-Caratiodori metric machinery. And so they rescaled it using that machinery so that it was evenly distributed within large intervals. Okay, so now Z is not one-dimensional, so it's higher dimensional, and so we need some sort of replacement lemma for that localization lemma. And so there's this one that we would like to use, which Crist had used to give an iterated T star T proof of convolution estimates for the paraboloid. And so this lemma says that if you have a set of points sitting in the unit ball and epsilon, then there is some parallelotope P. Okay, so a parallelotope is just a higher dimensional parallelogram. So that S is mostly contained within this parallelotope, and so that for any other parallelotope that's much smaller than P, S has negligible intersection with that parallelotope. Okay, so here, the P's and the Q's can have any orientation, so they can be pointing in completely different directions, which gives you a fairly strong sort of well-distributedness. Okay. But unfortunately, we don't really know how to use this to get mixed norm estimates. And the difficulty here is that if you have two parallelotopes which have the same size and they have the same eccentricity, but they're pointed in different directions, then just because they intersect doesn't mean that one is contained within a constant dilate of another. Okay, so this means that we can't do this covering argument with these parallelotopes pointing in different directions. So we can't use this lemma to get the mixed norm estimates. Okay. Okay, so instead, we use a weaker lemma. Yeah, so the fact that we can't use this is what keeps us from getting the right estimate when d is equal to 6. Okay. But in the other dimensions, we're able to use this weaker lemma. And here we fix the axes for the parallelotopes, and then we find a parallelotope with axes parallel to these axes so that the set's mostly contained in that parallelotope. And so that for any parallelotope with the same direction axes that has negligible intersection, if this is smaller than your original parallelotope. And so this satisfies kind of the good covering argument properties. So this is what we use when d is equal to 5, 7, 8, or 9. Okay, so that's it.